I just read of an incident in which Srila Prabhupada, on first meeting a man in Bombay, asked him about his daily schedule. So that man replied, "Well, I get up in the morning, I brush my teeth, I take some coffee and toast and go to work." Obviously he wasn't Superman, he had a very ordinary way. Any number of millions of people in the world could have answered in the same way. Srila Prabhupada, this is the first time he met that person, asked him, "Then what is the difference between you and a pig?" To which the person thought about it and thought, "Well, not that much difference. Of course, the pig doesn't take coffee and go to work, but his life is simply..." The point was, this man was a pious man who was already chanting Hare Krishna daily. So presumably, he had heard the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, and he had heard that human life is meant for God realization. Ahara nidra bhaya maitunam cha samanyam etat pashubhya naranam. Every human being eats, sleeps, has sex, and eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, and fights either physically or verbally, or makes some arrangement to protect himself or herself, to be politically correct. And guess what? All the animals do that too. So, we may ask ourselves, what is the difference between myself and a pig? There literally might not be that much difference if we spend our lives simply living for the sake of living. Then we may very soon find ourselves literally in the body of a pig, because that's what happens. If you only like to eat, sleep, mate and defend, then why go to all the trouble of going to work? If you're a pig, you have it all brought to you, all arrangements made. Actually, what could be better than a pig's life, you see? You have your breakfast brought to you. Of course, in India, they have to go out and get it in the fields, because still today, many people in India, they, after rising early in the morning, they go to the field and they let out yesterday's breakfast through their backside, and the pigs come and take their fresh breakfast, which is the people's breakfast one day later, fresh stool or whatever. There are so many vulgar words in every language for that stuff which comes out of people's backsides. So anyway, the pigs, they have a very good life, and they have the food brought to them. They don't have to pay taxes. They're served. The farmer looks after them very nicely. The only problem for the poor pig is that one day his pleasant life, without any warning even, he doesn't even get a trial, his pleasant life comes to a sudden end. So you may wonder, what are we discussing these things for in a religious meeting? Why are we is our purpose to be kind to the pigs? Let's start a movement, protect the pigs. Which ones? The two-legged ones or the four-legged ones? Look after... protect the pigs. We should look after ourselves. Where are we going? Are we going to take birth as a pig in our next life? This, of course, when you say this, some people snigger. You know what that word snigger means? It means to slightly laugh. Laugh a little bit. Whoops. He didn't think that was very humorous. Protest from the microphone. Okay, get back there. Be a good boy. But actually, these these are facts. You may ask, how do we know they're facts? Well, we can't know in the same way that you might say that we can empirically study and find out. You might know, or you might accept as an empiric fact that water is composed of hydrogen and oxygen. So you may accept that as a scientific fact. Actually, there has been much research done into reincarnation, and by all scientific standards, it's been proved as a scientific fact. There is such research. But we accept that there is knowledge beyond this simply eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. We accept that as an axiom. That life is meant for more than living, simply living without any higher purpose. That ultimately we do have a better purpose. We have a spiritual purpose. And that can be discovered. That is available. Knowledge about that is available. Not exactly empirically, but then why should everything have to be empirical? This the modern education system educates us. But that means not only the schools, but everything. The TV, the whole ethos makes us think that reality is only that which some people call scientists define it as. But why? Why should it be? Why should it? Why should life be, as they say, simply a combination of chemicals? Why? Then why should we get upset over anything? Why bother? We don't bother when the pigs are killed, but we bother when humans are killed. We become upset, isn't it? And I guess in Slovenia people are more upset when Slovenian people get killed. Just like you'll find in the American newspapers that when one American gets killed in Iraq, it's news. And then, you know, every day so many Iraqis are being killed by Americans, but that's not big news. So why should we be inclined to a Slovenian bag of chemicals any more than a Pakistani ball of chemicals? Why do we become attracted to, why do we think my wife, my children, if it's all just chemicals? It's not all chemicals. That's the point. There is the soul. We are souls. We are living beings. How old are you? This is supposed to be an old man. He's dozing off there. It's a boring lecture. He's heard it all before. How old is that particular bag of bones that you're presently inhabiting? Yeah. 61. So that's considered old. Then, any babies? Yeah, there's a baby. Any babies? Should be some babies. No? No babies around? There's one screaming outside. There's Sebastian's daughter. How old is your daughter? 6 and a half. So when she's 10 times older than now, she'll be as old as you. Okay, so you're 61 years old. And where were you 62 years ago? 62 years ago. Where were you? Nowhere. You were nowhere. Wrong. It's the wrong answer. There's an idea that, well, there are two ideas prominent in the West. One is that life comes into being just by a combination of chemicals. And the more traditional idea is that every time a human is born, there's a new soul, right? That's the Christian idea. That God creates new souls, and then most of them he throws into hell. For some reason or other. He's all merciful, all loving, and all kind. You don't remember. You don't remember, but that doesn't mean you didn't exist. Actually, it's not that God is creating new souls to chuck them into hell. God had some fancy. He created the world, made some humans to inhabit it, throws most of them into hell, and then at some point there's a day of judgment, then the world's all over and God goes back to whatever he was doing before. Just some fancy of his to create some new souls for throwing into hell, most of them. But if we study actually more elaborate spiritual knowledge, better explained spiritual knowledge, you existed 62 years ago. And baby over there existed now 6.5, 7 years ago. She also existed. She wasn't your daughter then. She was somewhere else. You don't know where. But she was somewhere else, waiting to take birth as your daughter. So who are we? We're eternal. Then who am I? It's actually very good news that we're not this bag of bones. Bag of bones and so many other things. Because it's not a very nice bag of bones. However nicely you decorate it, however much you do yoga and eat healthy foods, there's so much suffering in this body. But we are not the body. This is the first lesson of spiritual life. Sorry for all of you who are coming week after week after week, but not sorry. Why are we sorry? We should say it again and again. Krishna says it again and again. Whenever Krishna comes to this world, he tells us we're not the body. What we need to hear. He doesn't get tired of saying it. Srila Prabhupada said it again and again and again. He doesn't get tired of saying it. Because we need to hear it. We really need to hear it. It's Maya illusion to think that we are the body. But it seems for us very difficult to think anything else but that we are the body. And therefore, Krishna very kindly arranges that we suffer in this body. Why should he arrange that we should suffer? If God is kind, why should he arrange that we suffer? Because we're already suffering. We're already, of course, in Slovenia, especially in the summer, it might seem that we're not suffering because everyone's very civilized, and the worst thing that ever happened here is someone threw a few stones in the parliament, so I learned yesterday. People are very civilized, but actually lots of pigs are being killed in this country, and cows are being killed, and humans are also dying, and it's actually, although people do it very politely, there are a lot of sinful activities going on, and everyone's suffering, repeated birth, death, old age and disease. And even though we're very civilized, superficially civilized about it, this is a condition of suffering. We're all in a condition of suffering. Why is that? Why should we be in a condition of suffering? Well, often people ask that. Actually, that was the main question asked to the Pope recently when he was asked. People from all over the world put questions to the Pope. And so one of the repeated theme was, why is there suffering? And his answer was that we cannot know. Not a very inspiring answer, but a step up from because someone ate an apple a long time ago. But nevertheless, not very inspiring. Well, the reason is given in Bhagavad Gita, actually. Why are you suffering? Why are you suffering? First of all, it's a very good, the first step in spiritual life, the first step towards spiritual life is to recognize that I am suffering. Like I say, it can be difficult in Slovenia in the summer. It's easier in Slovenia in the winter. But the answer is there in Bhagavad Gita. It's very simple. Purusha sukha dukkhanam bhuktritve hetu ruchyate. We ourselves have created a condition in which we suffer in this material world, and sometimes it seems like we're enjoying. Just like it may seem like we're enjoying in the summer. You can go outside and enjoy the sun. It's very nice, it may seem. But that little bit of enjoyment is not the actual position of the soul, who we are, the soul. We're not the body. The body is temporary. We are eternally existing. Before the body came into being, I existed. After the body dies, which it inevitably will do, then I will continue to exist. What am I supposed to be? Who am I? I am by nature. Now some people will say, I am God. Bogus. You're not God. Anyone who thinks they're God is fool number one. There are plenty of fools in the world, but the biggest fool is the one who thinks that I am God. So, we're not God, but we are of the same nature as God, which is all blissful, all eternal. We're not meant to suffer in this world, but we create a condition for ourselves by turning away from God, whose name, by the way, is Krishna. He has a name, not just some post, just like the president. But no, he's a person. And that's what makes our suffering, because Krishna means all attractive. And when we turn away from Krishna, who we have an eternal, intimate relationship of love with, then we come into this condition of suffering. It's inevitable. We must suffer. Just to give an analogy, just like a fish, there's no way you can make it, there's nothing you can do to a fish to make a fish happy if the fish is out of water, because it's out of its natural position. And when it's in the water, whatever else you may do to the fish, whatever you offer it to make it happy, all of that put together cannot make it even slightly as happy as putting it back in the water, which is just its normal position. So with us also, we are not in a natural position in this material world. That's why we're struggling. We have to go to work. We're trying to, you know, we're always in anxiety. What will happen in future? Now people around the world are getting in more and more anxiety as the economic collapse, natural disasters, war everywhere, society gets worse day by day, and even in Slovenia, unimaginably, the parliament is attacked with stones. So things are getting very bad, and there's no sign of anything getting better. So, we are like fish out of water, whatever else we do. We cannot be happy unless we come to our constitutional position in relationship with Krishna. We are all intimately connected with Krishna. That is our natural happy position. Krishna means all attractive. Everything about Krishna is attractive. What does Krishna do? Well, you can see some paintings. He lives a very happy life. He's a person. Krishna is a person. Of course, many people, they don't like that idea, because they think, well, spiritual means it's all just some big oneness. All in one. All in one and one in all. But why not? What's the fun about just being all one? Just buzzing around for eternity? What's that? Rather, there is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. God is having fun, but not like going out in the streets of Ljubljana, drinking something and shouting out and calling out, but good, clean fun, you can say. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. Everything he does is all enjoyable. In a manner that in our present situation, we can hardly imagine. Our consciousness is so constricted. We can hardly imagine what is the nature of life with Krishna. But we are simply meant to be with Krishna. That's all. Singing with Krishna, laughing with Krishna, dancing with Krishna, cooking for Krishna, eating with Krishna, stealing Krishna's food out of fun, kissing Krishna. You can kiss, yeah? You can kiss Krishna also. Why not? Why become one with God? You can kiss Him. He'll kiss you. So this is our natural blissful life. Not pig life. Natural life is very happy with Krishna. No death, no old age. Krishna is no old age for Krishna. We never see Krishna becoming old. Krishna is always young. Nava Yovana, always young. So we create our suffering condition simply by forgetting Krishna. What is the solution to all the problems? What is the solution? Well, in Slovenia they might say, kick out all the Bosnians. But that's not the problem. That's not the problem, that's not the solution. The solution is simply remember Krishna. That's all. Very simple. Just like the fish out of water. What's the solution? You can do different diagnoses, prognoses, try and work it out, bring all the doctors, take his pulse rate, his heartbeat. Do they have a heart, fish? I don't know. I wasn't very good in biology class. Do they have a heart? Some of them do. Okay. Learn more than me in his 61 years. Anyway, you can do various tests on the fish. But the very simple solution is the fish has to go back in the water. So in the same way, we can study in various ways what to do, how to lengthen our life, how to shorten other people's lives, how to this, how to that, how to grow more food, how to bomb others, meditation, so many different things. But the real thing is just to find out what are we supposed to be doing. What are we supposed to be doing in this world? And the answer is, we're not meant to be here at all. We don't belong here. We don't belong in a place where there is birth and death. We don't like that, do we? We don't like to die. Anyone like to die? Some people think it's a relief. That's true. Many people commit suicide. But actually it doesn't happen though. Because the soul doesn't die. And killing the body, we have no right to kill, to take the life away, even from the present, from our own body, the body that we're in. So we have to suffer. Sinful reaction. So suicide is also sinful. Euthanasia is also. We think, well, poor person, they're old, and there's no money for their pension anyway, so why not give them a nice little injection and it'll finish their suffering forever. But it's not so, it doesn't work like that. Because the soul continues to exist. So the simple solution to all problems is to remember Krishna. Then we don't get born again, because that's the whole problem. Why we came here in the first place. So people may think that the Hare Krishna people are somewhat unusual, harmless, but strange, but harmless, singing in the streets. But there is a deep message. People should understand this. People are suffering because they do not know who we are, what we are supposed to do. They don't know. So this Krishna Consciousness Movement is meant simply for giving this information to others. not to live our lives simply eating, working, not inherently very different from the pigs, but at least just try to understand we are suffering. We are not meant for suffering. We are meant for living eternally and blissfully, and we can do that. We can come to that position. There's nothing to stop us that in this life from coming out of a condition of complete ignorance to a condition of complete knowledge and complete self-realization. We can do it. It's just a matter of understanding one very simple fact. Who we are. What is our constitutional position. What we are supposed to do. So this is learning the science of the self, the science of the soul. That the body is temporary. Before this body existed, we existed in many bodies. This present body that I have or you have, it is the result of activities and performed in many, many lives previously, and desires. The body that we get in future is, it's a projection of the desires and the activities that I perform now. So, if I like to eat lots of meat, for instance, I my mouth fills with saliva whenever I think of meat, then it's very likely that we're going to take birth in a body. These are the laws of nature, the subtle laws of nature. We're going to take birth in a body which facilitates eating meat, such as that of a cat, or a dog, or a tiger. That's what we get. If we like to engage in unrestricted sexual activities, then we're likely to take birth, for instance, in the body of a monkey. Monkeys don't have marriages. So, better be a monkey than a human. We get our future according to our desire and our activities. So simply we have to change our desire to that which is for our actual benefit. That's all. It's a simple point. Then what is our actual benefit? That we are eternally related with Krishna, the supreme, all-attractive in the spiritual world. Our consciousness is purified by chanting the names of Krishna, by hearing about Krishna. Just like in the spiritual world, we can cook for Krishna. We can cook for Krishna here. We can bring flowers for Krishna. So this is very practical. Simply a matter of understanding our eternal relationship with Krishna and acting in that relationship. Then the consciousness becomes purified. And we experience Krishna in our lives. Then we don't get born again and we go to Krishna. So this, in a summary, is Krishna consciousness. And this consciousness should be broadcast to everyone, because Krishna consciousness, it's not a religious sect in the sense that there are so many different religious sects, but it is the natural position of the soul. Everyone is by nature Krishna conscious, just like a fish by nature swims in water. So every soul, not only those that are in human bodies, but those that are presently in pig bodies and cat bodies and insect bodies and tree bodies, all living beings are part and parcel of Krishna. So this should be broadcast everywhere. Everyone should know. So we also have a mission in the Krishna consciousness movement. Not exactly to convert people. You can't, it's just like a fish. You can't convert a fish into a fish. But you can bring a fish back to the water where the fish belongs. So in the same way, every living being is by nature related with Krishna. So we simply wish to remind everyone about that. That's all. So, that's your duty in Slovenia. People are nice, no doubt. In many ways, very civilized and cultured people. But we just wish to inform them that however nice you think Slovenia is, you can't stay here. You have to go on to another body. So if you're cultured and civilized, very good. Now take that a step further. Be actually cultured and civilized. Come to the actual platform of human life, which is understanding our spiritual quest, simply to live for eating and sleeping, maybe watching some movie, reading some book, without any knowledge of who we actually are. This is ignorant life. Just like the pigs, they're living in ignorance. So take this knowledge and live an actually civilized life. People cannot be actually civilized if they're just taking meat from the slaughterhouse and drinking wine. This is not civilization. Come to a higher platform of civilization. Live a pure life and chant the names of Krishna. This is our proposition. All right, I'm over time. I'm supposed to finish at 4:30. And people, mostly they don't like to listen very long anyway, because people grew up watching Tom and Jerry, so they don't have, they don't have much attention span. I did too, I must admit, but that was, I feel like that's another life, that whatever happened before I came in this Krishna conscious movement, it feels to me like a different life. My life began, 36 years ago. I'm 36, but you may think, well, I look older, don't I? What do you think? Well, my real life began, real life, when I came into this Krishna consciousness movement. So whatever happened before that seems to me like a dream, and not such a good one either. Now everything's nice. So any question, please. Any question, comment, protest, or anything else? Yes, please.
I have a question. I set the curriculum in Bible course in the 7th Adventist.
Yeah.
And I learned that Jesus has also disciples in other religions.
Jesus has what?
Also disciples in other religions.
Jesus has disciples in other religions.
Also.
Really?
Not just Catholics or Protestants. So.
I see.
And my question is, because I know some people in my life that had something special in them, like memory of Krishna, but they were never in the movement. So, is it the question is, does Krishna also have disciples outside the Hare Krishna movement, or do you have to chant Hare Krishna?
Does Krishna have disciples outside the Hare Krishna movement? Well, everyone, philosophically speaking, everyone has an eternal relationship with Krishna. Everyone. So everyone is a devotee of Krishna. Just some people recognize it and others don't. That's all. I, in one sense, you could say that everyone is a follower of Jesus also, because Jesus only taught to worship our Father who art in heaven. So it's the same thing, but expressed in a different language. Although, frankly, what Christ taught and what goes on in the name of Christ, there's been a lot of difference, historically speaking. So, I wonder, if Jesus was born today, where would he go? Where do you think? Would he join the Seventh Day Adventists, or what he started new movement, or he was a man of the people. The people. What is the people? Everyone's a person. Everyone who's in need, who's sick. Yeah, everyone's. But everyone gets sick.
Yes, but some people met Jesus and they were relieved.
They met Jesus and they relieved. But then you have to die again. Right? So relieving people's bodily needs is not actually... That's not the real gift of a spiritually advanced person. The real gift is to give them that knowledge by which they never will get sick ever again. It can be a trap, yeah. This showing miracles, that might be impressive to people who are not very advanced in spiritual knowledge. But it can be a trap, because it actually drags our consciousness lower. If we ascribe much importance to healing the body, then it drags our consciousness down to the level of the body. But real spiritual teaching will elevate our consciousness to help us understand that we are not the body anyway. And even if someone is healed from sickness, again they'll get sick. That is the nature of this world. So a better teaching than relieving someone from sickness is to give them that knowledge, to impart to them that level of elevated consciousness by which they can tolerate sickness. They're not disturbed by that, by understanding that we're not the body. And yeah, change the attitude. And practically I see, I've lived in India and neighboring countries most of my life, that people in that part of the world, they don't get so upset if they, you know, someone, for instance, their arm might get lopped off. Oh, I'll give you an example. I was reading something about soldiers from America in Iraq who lose a limb, and they go back to America and they get treated, and they feel traumatized all their life that, you know, now I only have one arm, or now I have two arms but no hands, or something like this. So I asked one of my friends, one of my disciples actually, who was a retired Indian Army officer and had seen plenty of action, means plenty of dead bodies, killed people and seen his friends killed and maimed, because I didn't see that in India. I didn't see that people, you know, people seem to be more happy. They don't seem to be so much concerned. And I asked him, though, does that happen in the Indian Army, that people get all upset when they lose a hand or a leg or something? And no. They just say, well, that's life. And they go on with life. That's all. So it's a different attitude to life, because people understand that anyway, we're in this world for a short time, and anything can happen at any time. And if I lose a hand or a leg, well, there must be some reason for that. But anyway, we have to go on with life.
So changing the attitude.
Raising people to a higher level of consciousness is much more, it's much, much more important than trying to solve their bodily problems. Sorry?
I just wanted to say, the changing the attitude means knowing on what
I couldn't understand.
Changing the attitude.
Yeah.
Means knowing on what we have.
Knowing who we are, yeah. Knowing who we are. So yeah, in some ways this bodily welfare work, such, you know, opening hospitals and all this, spiritually speaking, that can pull us down or keep us down in the consciousness of thinking that the body is all in all, and that's most important. But real spiritual knowledge begins when we understand that we're not the body. That doesn't mean that we're callous to the body. That doesn't mean that we make a policy of neglecting people who are suffering bodily pains. But at the same time, we understand that the very nature of this world is that there will be such suffering, and we will continue in such suffering conditions as long as we do, as long as we identify with this body. So real spiritual help is to bring people to the higher platform of consciousness of understanding we're not the body. And it works, actually. I mean, you can... I've personally experienced this. I'll just give a little anecdote from my own life, a very ordinary thing. Being in the dentist's chair. I was at a dentist a few years ago who was drilling my teeth. It's not a very pleasant experience, as you know. I think everyone's probably had that. And he decided not to use any anesthetic. I guess he thought, I don't know what he thought, but he thought that, well, this is a sadhu, so I'm not supposed to feel any pain, but damn it, it was painful like anything. It was very painful. And then a couple of minutes into it, so I was sitting like this, you know. And then some minutes into it, I realized that I got a bit philosophical and thought that, well, anyway, whatever it is, I'm in this position, now I have to go through with it, and it'll be over after some time, and anyway, I'm not the body, and I relaxed a bit. So the dentist said afterwards, I saw at the beginning you were very tense, but then you relaxed. So you're not invited to attack me with machetes to see how I respond. But it is a fact, I mean, that when we understand we're not the body, then the pain by its automatically, we don't feel pain in the world in the same way. So even if people, you see, even if someone's sick and you arrange a hospital and they get cured, but still they're going to suffer. Where is the suffering? Just like in the tooth, was the suffering in my tooth when it was being drilled? No, it's in the mind. The suffering is in the mind. So someone who has material expectations that I should be happy in this world, they will always suffer because the very nature of this world is to frustrate us. So when we realize that I'm not part of this world, my relationship is with Krishna, happiness is with Krishna, then we will be happy everywhere, in every situation. Whatever the situation is, we can be happy, knowing that my happiness, it doesn't depend on these chemicals, this body. That is the spiritual position. So that's better. Hare Krishna. Anything else? Yes, please.
Many religions are, when teaching to people, then they expect, because they don't change so fast, there will be some catastrophe, you know, then it will quickly change the consciousness. But do we really see this happening in the practice? Let's say you take a tsunami in India sometimes ago. People become more biased because of that, or...
Okay, the question is, I'll repeat it, that religious people who are preaching, they often, it seems, almost hope for a catastrophe, so that people will be, with the idea that people will automatically become more religious after a catastrophe. You're asking me if that actually happens, and you're asking me about in India after the tsunami. I was in Tamil Nadu, which was hit by the tsunami. Funny thing, we found out about it, first of all, by one of our devotees who's from Latvia, his mother phoning him up and said, are you okay with the tsunami? He said, what? because we were, you know, a few hundred kilometers inland. People react differently. We find that after the Second World War, there was a lot of talk about, there was the moral rearmament movement, and people were saying we have to turn back to God. That was in the Western world, in the world of the so-called victors. And then in Germany itself, many people became atheists in the defeated country because they were all praying to God to win and they lost. So then they thought, well, there can't be any God, because I saw something on YouTube recently about, there was some interview with the Dalai Lama, and the interviewer asked him, can you bless my football team to win? He's a smart guy, the Dalai Lama. He gave a good... A good answer means got him off the hook. He said, I can bless, but no guarantee. So, yeah, they are nothing spiritual whatsoever, just like fast rapport. But then, you see, blessing one football team to win, and then what if the next person is a supporter of the other football team they're playing against? You see? Then the Dalai Lama, what if he's asked to bless that team also? Then... The thief is praying, dear God, please make everyone very sleepy so I can steal in peace. And the householder is praying, please God, protect me from the thieves. And then what's God supposed to do? He has to answer all our prayers. So do these catastrophes make people more religious? It may have that effect if people are somewhat pious, but it's not going to last very long, because that's the nature of illusion in this world, that when there's intense suffering, then people, they start to look for something else, something different, and that may be religious, but that may not last very long. And again, if people become religious, what is usually called religious is that people expect God will bless us so that we will live very nicely in this world, which is not actually very helpful at all. This idea that our religion is better than your religion because we're more prosperous, this is the Protestant ethic, that God blesses you by giving you money. You work hard and you believe in God, and God gives you plenty of money. And these are very sankuchit, means closed up, restricted understandings of the actual nature of spiritual life. So maybe if there's a... Actually, if we had eyes to see it, every moment is a catastrophe. The very fact that we're wasting... We have this human life after so many births, and we're just wasting our time on petty things. So it's a catastrophe. Everything is a catastrophe. But when there's some concentrated suffering, then people may start to think a little bit. Maybe. That may happen. That doesn't mean we're going to start bombing the place in the hope that people are going to start becoming more religious. Rather, we don't like this. We don't like to see the people are suffering. We don't like that. We don't like to see that. But at the same time, we have to inform people that we cannot stop suffering by any material means. No matter how many doctors you train, no matter how many hospitals you build, no matter how many band-aid factories you build, there are going to be sick people. Suffering will go on. The very nature of this world is suffering. But again, the suffering is due to the suffering is in the mind, our response to it. So we can transcend suffering by understanding that we do not belong to this platform of existence. We are by nature spiritual. We are by nature pure and blissful. It's all in the mind. The idea, I will get more money, then I will be more happy. And people, they spend their whole life working, 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 working with the idea, I will get more money, I will be more happy. But it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen that people become more happy by getting more money. Some years ago from the London School of Economics, there was a survey. They asked people all over the world different questions. And they found out that the most happy people in the world are in Bangladesh, which isn't famous for being very rich. I lived for several years, about 8 years in Bangladesh. And people are very simple. And one thing is, everyone has unquestioning faith in God. They're mostly Muslims, many Hindus, some Christians, some Buddhists. So that's one factor. People believe in God. And because most people, they have no hope of what we would call in the West improving their life. They don't have any aspiration to do so. So they're content. And religious means they spend a lot of time. At that time there was no electricity in the villages. No one had ever heard of, most people never heard of a TV, let alone even seen one or watched one. So people spend their time in religious activities. That's all. Either Islamic or Hindu or whatever. People are happy like that. Simple. You may say, what is that? Ignorance is bliss. But actually, knowledge is bliss. Those people are more knowledgeable about the real factors of life than the people in Harvard University, because they understand that the real purpose of our life is to surrender to God. That's actual knowledge. Modern education, modern society is so sophisticated, so complex, it covers over the most important thing, which makes us live like pigs, to bring us back to the beginning of what I was speaking about. So better not live like pigs. Live a truly spiritual life. Chant Hare Krishna. Or if you want, you can chant the name of Christ. Yes, you can also do. Don't kill animals. Don't drink alcohol. These things are all degrading to the spirit. And Hare Krishna. And anything else? Anything else anyone like to say? No. All right then, when what is left to say but Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Let's go on saying that again and again and again. Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The perfection of life is simply to be absorbed in chanting the names of Krishna.